This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Citizens Research Council of Michigan President Eric Lufer tells us about their new report, which spells out big budget decisions looming for the state. But first, Kalamazoo public safety officials are trying something different when it comes to the people they believe are responsible for about half of the gun violence in the city, meeting with them and offering help. In June, a meeting was held with members of so-called street groups as part of the strategy known as Group Violence Intervention. Captain David Boyson is with the Kalamazoo Public Safety Department's Community Outreach and Problem Solving Division. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Explain to our audience, how does group violence intervention work?
Group violence intervention is a strategy that's been developed over the course of many years. Kind of started in Boston with Operation Ceasefire in Boston is where it kind of started in the 90s. And it's kind of evolved from there. David Kennedy from John Jay College has been a pioneer in this. And so he developed these strategies that have proven effective in reducing group-involved violent crime. And so we've partnered with John Jay College and the National Network, and we have begun starting about 2012, starting to slowly implement some of these strategies.
You say group-involved. The word gang is not used here, right?
Right. Because if we get stuck with a title, people will say, well, we don't have a gang problem, and it's not an organized gang like the Vice and Crips. So it doesn't matter what you call it, whether it's groups, blocks, certain people associate with a certain block, or family members sometimes could be groups. Groups is just an easier way to put it. It's a group of people involved in similar activity that engage in a disproportionate amount of this violent crime.
Why did Kalamazoo and the Public Safety Department decide that this was a path they wanted to follow?
Well, really, it didn't come from public safety. This was a community-led effort. Isaac was the one that really pushed for this, and I believe they were talking about this way back in 2012 is when they kind of started with this discussion. So it was really a community-led effort, and a lot of people think this is a law enforcement program, but really law enforcement is one piece of this. It's really, there's three buckets to the GVI strategy. Law enforcement is one part of it, but community outreach members are a very big part of it, and social services is the third piece of that. And it's really those three groups working together. So when the community approached us to look into this strategy, Chief Hadley was very open about, you know, we knew some of the strategies law enforcement were doing was not working. So we were open to new ways to maybe look into how do we get a better handle on some of our violent crime. So once we started looking into the strategy, partnering with these other people, that's not kind of how it got started.
Charlotte Davis, who's the executive director of Isaac, addressed the city commission during the last meeting when there was a presentation made about group violence intervention. And she said that one of the things this does is offer resources that can help people change their path. How can they change their path?
Well, and that's what we really began looking at. Number one is, and kind of to back up to the numbers a little bit, 2012 kind of started the Community Outreach and Problem Solving Division, which is when we combined the drug unit, which is Kalamazoo Valley Enforcement Team, with community policing. And the chief did that as kind of a platform for the initial. So when we were able to launch the group violence intervention, that was kind of the division we were going to launch it from to give capacity for that. So we kind of started way back in that. And so as we partnered up with the National Network, one of the things we did was a group audit and shooting review. And what we did with that group audit is we looked at how many groups that we have known in the city, where we pulled all the officers and frontline staff in the room to talk about incidents and identifying group members. And then we crunched numbers for how many shootings that we've had, non-fatal shootings in the last 5 years, and homicides over the last 2 years. And so we started looking at those numbers, and we showed that our numbers in Kalamazoo match what's going on across the country. A very small percent of the population is involved in a disproportionate amount of the shootings of violent crime. In fact, it worked out to about 0.4% of the city's population have been identified as members of these particular groups. And then we saw, that again, that they were involved in not only just being suspects in violent crime, but also victims from violent crime. So that's where the services come in, is, you know, we can focus a lot of our attention and services on just that very small people who are most at risk.
And so what sort of things might be available? Education, assistance with employment?
So our big partner in this initiative is Goodwill Industries of Southwest Michigan. And I work very closely with them. Stacia Taverna, who works for Goodwill, she's our point person. So basically, they're like the agency that coordinates the social services. Some of them they provide, some of them they partner with others. but they have a lot of people in-house, like housing resources, literacy council. There's a lot of different pieces to that. So one of the things that we offer when we go talk to these folks is help with traditional services such as housing and education, GED, employment. But what we really find with the GVI strategy is what they need, a lot of these guys in this involved in these group activities, is the little things. We call it the big, small stuff, where they might need help. Some don't have birth certificates. They might need help getting navigating the system to get their birth certificate so they get an ID card. They might need help with transportation to and from their training, work, whatever. Bus tokens, we help with that. Just little things, child support. A lot of people have child support, and how do you structure your child support so you can pay that and work at the same time? You have to help them with those little things first, and then you look at employment and GEDs and things like that.
At that city commission meeting when the presentation was made, Addis Moore, the president of the Northside Ministerial Alliance, said that it's important that people are treated as individuals. But he also said we do want safe neighborhoods. We want safe streets. So what's the other side of this? Because we were talking here about the carrots that are out there.
Right.
But there are some consequences, right?
Sure.
If people do not follow through and take advantage of the services being offered, or if they engage in violent crime again.
And that's why it's important to say this is not just a law enforcement piece. This is a community approach. So when we talk to these individuals, and we've developed our strategies over the last few years and found what's most effective, and we do a couple things. One of the things that's really helped us get ahead of this is we have weekly crime reduction meetings where we have basically shooting reviews. So if we have a violent incident in the city, we all meet as a law enforcement staff, just the law enforcement working group, and we discuss who is involved in the most recent shootings. And then what we'll do is we'll look at their individual exposure to the criminal justice system. So if they have a very bad criminal history, they might be accepted for federal prosecution, or they may be a mandatory minimum in the state. But we'll get that agreement from the U.S. attorney and the prosecutor on our team to say, hey, if this person is involved in another violent incident, or if we catch this person with a gun, what will they be looking at? And before, we would just try to, law enforcement would just, okay, let's go out and try to get this guy. They might have a gun. Let's try to arrest them because we got to protect the community. Well, now the approach is, before we go out and arrest them, we will deliver what's called a custom notification, where we will warn them up front, just so you know, you are a priority offender because we know that you've been involved in some recent violent incidents, and we want you to stop. And if you don't, this is what you can expect to happen. So we basically tell them up front. So if they do get caught with a gun, they have no one to blame but themselves because we told them what they would be looking at as far as sanctions. But when I go deliver those custom notifications, it's not just me. So there's two parts to it. Number one is basically, if you want to call it the stick portion, you could talk about the carrot. This is the stick saying, hey, if you shoot, this is what you can expect to get. It's already been agreed upon, just to let you know so you're not blindsided by this. So hopefully you make a better decision. And the second piece of that is, but if you want help and you want to get out of this lifestyle, these are the people that will help you. And what we found is when I go to their door and talk to them, I bring Stacia Taverna from Goodwill with me so she can introduce herself and tell what services are available. So it's not just a number to call. It's a face that they can put so she can build a little bit of relationship and rapport with them. And then we also have community members who come with us so they can say, as a member of this community, we want you to be alive. We want you to be safe. We want you out of prison. We want you to be productive members of this community. Listen to these folks. You know, they can help you. And then what we also do is if you were arrested for a gun or a violent offense and you come up on parole, is what we'll do is the week you get released on parole, the same group will come to your house and deliver that same message saying, hey, we, you know, welcome back to the community. We want you to be successful. Because of your already severe criminal history that you might have, especially if you just got out, if you get caught committing a violent act again, you know, you're going to go back to prison and possibly federal prison. We don't want that. Now, Pastor Cunningham has been a very big help in this, and he's from Seasons of Change Church. And he's head of a group called Men of Change, where they provide counseling and peer support for people who just got out of prison. Because it's not fair to say, well, you know, you're a convicted felon now, and you're released from prison, go get a job. It's almost impossible. You can't do it without help, and you can't do it without support of the community. So we come to say that we care, and here's the tools that you can use if you want to be successful.
Let me go back for a moment to the first example you were talking about of going to somebody's house and talking to them. Now, I'm assuming here we are not talking about somebody who is wanted for homicide or attempted homicide.
Right.
Might it be something that's a little lower offense and you're trying to target someone who you think might ramp that up to something more serious?
Well, it's kind of more specific than that, because as what we found, and this is why it's been important for us to put this strategy in place, because almost half of the shootings that we have in Kalamazoo, non-fatal shootings, there's no prosecution desired. In other words, someone gets hit by gunfire and they might get wounded. We go to interview them, the police do, and they say, I don't want to talk to you. I'm not going to tell you who did it. I'm not going to, you know, basically saying I'll take care of it myself. And in the old ways that we used to do business, we would say, well, you know, our detectives aren't going to spend a lot of time investigating a crime if we don't have a complaint. And if we don't have someone that's going to press charges, then they're not going to investigate that shooting because it's going to be a waste of their time. So they would just close the case and that would be done. So basically by doing that, you're almost, from a law enforcement standpoint, you're almost condoning them to go ahead and take care of it yourself, go retaliate. So what we do now is if we have a non-fatal shooting and the person doesn't want to cooperate, and we believe we might know who was involved, we'll deliver that custom notification to both the intended victim, just to head off any retaliation, and then also to the suspect. And as what we found with the custom notification letters, if you are a victim of a shooting and you tell the police, I'm not going to prosecute, and you're going to take care of it yourself, in some of these groups, the culture is if you get assaulted or shot at, you're expected to retaliate. And if you don't, you lose credibility amongst your peers and you look weak. Is what we do is when we give them this custom notification letter, a lot of times they'll take a picture of it on their phone and they'll ask us, hey, can I show people this? And we're like, yeah, show everybody this letter. So that gives them an honorable exit. That gives them a way out. So they can tell their peers, man, I got to lay low. I can't retaliate because the officers were just here and they told me I'm going to federal prison if I get caught with a gun again. So it gives them an honorable exit.
So far, what have you seen from this program in Kalamazoo? Does it seem to be having the desired impact?
Yes. We actually just pulled the stats day before yesterday to look at our non-fatal shootings. And again, this strategy isn't really designed. You're not going to prevent all the shootings in the city of Kalamazoo. You're not going to be able to predict nor prevent maybe a domestic-related type shooting or, you know, a crazy incident like we had with the Uber driver recently. Those incidents, this strategy is not going to impact because we can't predict nor prevent some of those random acts. But group involved, which we've already said is about half of our shootings, we can have a significant impact on those. And so in 2014, when we first put the crime reduction strategy, where we met every week to do a better job of getting ahead of these incidents, we put that in place in July of 2014. And in that year, in July, we had 47 people that were hit by gunfire in the city of Kalamazoo. And we looked at those numbers, and almost half of those people were group involved. About 20 of those were group involved members. Since that, we've seen steady reductions. The following year, 2015, we had 27 people hit by gunfire, 11 group involved. Last year in 2016, we had 19 people hit by gunfire and 7 were group involved. And so far this year, we've had 12 shootings and 3 of those were group involved. So our group involved shootings, which this strategy is designed to impact, the numbers are positive right now that shows that it is working.
Is this a change in tactics that is perhaps most noticeable for officers who've been around a while? In other words, that there is maybe a little more dialogue and a little more searching for other options as opposed to simply ramping up law enforcement when you sense that there is more violence or there's more of this sort of activity in the city?
Mm-hmm. Well, the strategy has been great for the officers because that, again, like they said at the city commission meeting, and it's very true, this is from Charlet, but every person has value. And Pastor Moore also mentioned that every person has value. And the officers are seeing that direct communication, they're seeing that guys are responding to that. And it's easy to get, you know, cynical as an officer if you're just doing enforcement all the time. If you're going from call to call and making arrests, it's a very negative type of business. Any outreach that we do or any offer that we can do to help some of these individuals, that also makes the officer feel better. And it also, it's more of a positive thing to offer help than constant consequences. And so we're seeing, and again, Chief Hadley started this when he first came over to try to change that culture shift on how officers perceive the community and how the community perceives them. It's building legitimacy and trust. And as you build that through this program, which I think enhances legitimacy and trust, instead of tricking people, we're telling them up front what we're doing. and we're offering help.
So what do you need to see next to show that this is working? I guess, you know, in other words, how long of an evaluation period do you have when mm-hmm. you're trying to determine if this is the way to keep going in Kalamazoo?
Well, number one is, and we're very careful when we talk to the community about this, because this is not a program, because a program kind of has a beginning and an end. This strategy is just the way we do business now. So this isn't going to be a trial period. This is just the way we do business, and we know it works. The numbers show it works. Now, we could have
it works in other cities as well.
And
that's part of the reason it was brought in.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. And like I said, and Kalamazoo is the second smallest city. There's only, I think, 26 cities across the country that are participating in this, and Kalamazoo is the second smallest. But it's been proven to work in some of these cities, you know, bigger cities, Boston, and they're doing it in Chicago, and they're starting it in Detroit. So it does work. So, you know, we're not going to change any time in the foreseeable future. This is just a better way to do law enforcement. It's better for the community. It's better for the officers. And it's better for the at-risk people that we're trying to help.
Captain David Boyson is with the Kalamazoo Public Safety Department's Community Outreach and Problem Solving Division. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you.
Links with more information about the Group Violence Intervention Program can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A new report from the Citizens Research Council of Michigan warns that the state is facing a new fiscally turbulent period after years of economic rebound. The CRC says a variety of factors will mean tough choices for policymakers in order to balance Michigan's budget in future years. Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Gordon. I'm pleased to be able to join you again.
Can you spell out for us in just broad details before we get into the nitty-gritty, how big a problem is Michigan facing in terms of its state budget in the near future?
So Michigan has a $56 billion total budget, but much of that is set aside for school funding or set aside for road funding, a number of other things. And that leaves a discretionary fund, what's called the general fund, of $10 billion. That funds community health, corrections, higher education, human services, the state police, the apparatus that exists in Lansing, a number of different things, state revenue sharing. And our report documents $2 billion, so about one-fifth of that total pie that is going to be set aside for different things over the coming years and really put a strain on the ability for the state to maintain those things that I just listed going forward.
One of the things you say early in your report is that the legislature has kicked many spending decisions down the road. If you can list a couple, what would they be?
So again, knowing these budget pressures are coming, the choice is to make up the money when they decided to create these business tax credits and the personal property tax reimbursement and the highway funding, all these types of things. There was some assumption that the existing taxes would grow at a pace sufficient to make up for them, and there would not be, you know, rising tide raises all boats type of thing. That hasn't happened. The economy, national economy, hasn't gone gangbusters, nor has the Michigan economy. So the choices going forward, maybe new taxes are necessary to make up that revenue that you assumed was going to happen organically. Failing to do that, you're going to have to make some cuts. There's a number of ways this plays out. It's not a win-win situation for everyone with the way the economy's gone and these budget pressures that are ahead of our state.
So there are certain areas of spending that the state legislature really cannot touch. As you mentioned, there are certain parts of the budget which are discretionary, others which are not. But you also tell us that the hands of lawmakers are tied somewhat because of something called earmarking, caps on the sales tax rate, and then automatic rate cuts. So how do these things prevent lawmakers from perhaps bringing in more revenue that might be used to address a budget crisis down the road?
So over the years, services that are near and dear to the hearts of citizens and the legislators that represent us have gotten what we call earmarks, or it's a dedication of funds. So the sales tax is a perfect example that most of the sales tax money that comes in goes to the school aid fund. Another portion goes to state revenue sharing, constitutional set aside for local governments. And that leaves only a very small portion of it that is comes into the general fund for discretionary funding. One response might be to increase the sales tax by one penny for a dollar of purchase. But what happens then is you put more money into the school aid fund, you send more money to local governments, and there's very little benefit for the general fund as a result of that. Could we increase the gas tax to come up with more money? Well, you would fund the roads, and maybe that frees up some money that you would not be taking out of the general fund, but it doesn't fix, you know, it doesn't directly fix the problem of insufficient funds to do everything that we have been doing to fund the general fund.
The state also has a number of outstanding tax credits that might be claimed by businesses. How uncertain is that picture right now for the state, and how difficult does that make planning if you are someone in the legislature or working in the governor's budget office when you're trying to prepare a spending plan for Michigan's future?
So as I understand it, they put in some working with the businesses that have these tax credits outstanding to create a little bit of certainty, a little bit of planning opportunity to know when they're going to become. But inherent in giving these tax credits is a fair level of uncertainty. What these are about, you recall, 2001 through 2012 or so, Michigan was going through a pretty miserable time. The rest of the nation recovered from the 2001 economic recession. Michigan never really did, and we were losing businesses, losing manufacturing jobs. Things were not going so well. And part of the effort to offset the declining economic conditions was the provision of tax credits against the corporate business tax called the Michigan business tax. When Governor Snyder came in, they changed the tax from the MBT to a corporate income tax, similar to what other states have. But those businesses that had these tax credits continue to file their taxes under the MBT, and they can continue to do so until these credits are claimed. Now, as a business, you're going to wait until it is most advantageous to you to offset the tax burden that you would have to pay, or similarly, the conditions have to be right that you've hired and maintained so many jobs before you can claim these credits. So there's not great certainty that you can look at the budget office and say, well, here's the number of credits and here's when they come due. There are some things beyond your control that are going to affect when businesses decide that it's time to claim those credits.
And when they do, that will mean additional pressures on the state budget.
Yeah, it is projected, again, not with 100% certainty, but projected that in the coming years, it is in excess of $600 million a year that will not be coming into the state because of these tax credits. And that directly affects the general fund.
Eric, as I read your report, I guess my takeaway is that Michigan is in for some tough times, even if the economy continues to grow at a healthy rate. The real concern, I suppose, would be if there is some sort of a downturn, if there's a recession. Is Michigan well prepared right now if there would be some sort of an economic slowdown?
Gordon, I don't think the question is if there's going to be a slowdown. I think the question is when there's going to be a slowdown. We are now 8 years removed from the end of the last recession, which was a very deep recession. And 8 years is an incredibly long time between economic downturns when you look at history and sort of how the cycle plays out from one recession to the next.
So we're almost overdue to have some sort of an economic downturn.
Well, economists might say we are overdue.
Yeah.
So your question is, are we prepared for it? Well, we have, to the credit of Governor Snyder and the legislature, we have built up some rainy day fund to have some ability to withstand the beginning of a downturn, but we know from history that even the amount of money they've put away gets sopped up pretty quickly. The issue, going back to where we started, 60% of the general fund comes from income tax revenue. And when you think about what happens when there's a downturn, either people are laid off or they're taking pay cuts or the stock market goes south, and so there's less earnings through dividends and things like that. All of that results in less income, which shrinks the income tax. So this general fund that we're talking about is very susceptible to changing economic conditions. Is the state prepared? The state has went through this sort of thing a decade ago. Our organization, like a few others, was going around trying to help people understand at that time that we had both a structural budget problem and a cyclical budget problem. The cyclical budget problem would fix itself, but the structural problem required adjustments in state policies. And while there was some adjustment to give us the period that we've had over the last 6 or 7 years, they're building in new structural budget problems with these tax credits, with the highway funding spending, with the Healthy Michigan, the personal property tax reimbursement, so that we seem to be repeating the mistakes that we went through a decade ago.
So your report predicts that at the low end, there's going to be an impact of $2 billion on Michigan's general fund by fiscal year 2022. That's 20% of the general fund. Is there a way of explaining that? I mean, that's obviously a big number, but is there a way of explaining that that communicates to people just how severe the problem could be for Michigan, again, at the low end of what you're projecting?
Well, I go back to, again, what does that money buy? When you talk about 20% of a $10 billion budget, it's sort of abstract, but 3 out of every $10 are buying Medicaid funding and community health funding to help those with the least among us. And for every dollar the state spends on that, it's bringing in $3 from the federal government. So you can cut funding to Medicaid, but that means that you're going to lose a whole lot more of federal money coming in. About 2 of every $10 that goes into the general fund is for corrections. So you can nip at the edges of that, but that's not going to really affect things. In order to really make any savings to that part of the budget, you need to close prisons. That either means consolidating prisoners into other facilities are changing policies on who really needs to be locked away from society. About $1.50 from each of the $10 that goes into the general fund, paying for higher ed and community colleges. So cuts there, again, we can expect to see more increases in tuition. While they've already escalated, I've got a daughter in college, I'm fully aware of how much tuition cost. And, it plays out again. I mentioned state revenue sharing before. I think one thing that we can foresee is the statutory state revenue sharing that our bigger cities like Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids rely on to maintain the services that their citizens expect will be at risk, and that's going to affect police and fire and parks and libraries and a number of other things. To take a 20% cut out of these services that are already less than they were going back to 2000, before things really started getting bad in Michigan, they've not really grown back to that level already. So we're talking about cutting them further, and that further affects the quality of life in Michigan.
Eric, as always, thank you very much for your time.
Gordon, I'm happy to do it, and I appreciate your time and your focus on our report.
Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. Their report on the future of the state budget is available at crcmich.org. A link can also be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.